the thing that really sort of dug it in for me was trying to heal an injury that I had that had lingered for longer than it should have. And I tried all these mechanical interventions, massage and physio and chiro. It was a back injury. And I started to dabble with playing with nutrition to see if that would move the needle. And so the philosophy that I was living by was like this sort of paleo diet, right?
Yeah.
Low inflammatory foods. So I became very militant about what was in and what was out. And the only way I knew what was in my food was to make it myself.
Mm.
I didn't really want to be the guy that goes to the cafe or the restaurant and says,
yeah,
do you mind asking the chef if he's that? That's like boring. And invitations to people's homes like pretty quickly dried up. And so because I was that guy, the pain in the ass to cook for.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, okay, I know what's potentially going to fix my back, so I'm going to make it myself. And so that sort of started to dig in. I started to experiment with those types of foods. And then I got onto a cooking show and we did reasonably well, which meant we stayed on for 6 months.
Mm.
And that's all we did was research recipes, practice, showtime, you know, like it was an immersive experience that meant after 6 months, like if I played guitar all day, every day for 6 months, you'd get reasonably good at it and you'd get quite passionate about
playing. So what happened then?
What do you mean? Playing guitar? I don't play guitar, babe.
So what's happened with the cooking then? My joke kind of fell flat.
You'd already said I wasn't all right, so it didn't work.
Damn it! You can cut that bit out.
No, leave it in.
Yes, there we go.
So anyway, that, I guess, learning to cook often and experiment because it was helping me and my physical condition, that was step one. And then step two was the cooking show. And then from then, cooking has been such an integral part of, not my as well as my personal life, my home life, but a lot of my work, you know. I've written cookbooks and health books that, you know, have a big focus around not just nutrition, but like cooking. Like you can't have nutrition without cooking, you know, like being the custodian of your own health, like taking control, like has to start in your own kitchen.
So what's your feeling then, having tapped regenerative sources?
Mm.
What difference did that make?
Well, so I wrote my first book in 2013, and I was talking about that then.
Really?
Not regen.
Yes.
Because it wasn't a thing.
No.
But I was talking about food sovereignty, which is a fancy way of saying, you know, kind of coming to terms with or understanding where your food is coming from.
Yes.
And in every book, I talk about that. And my last book, which nobody read because it was a flop, it's called The Sustainable Diet. And it's about looking at the food systems that are currently available to us.
No, but if it had come out now, it would be...
Yeah, it might be a different story. Good, but you know,
it came out at a time really when... Anyway, we don't need to go into it. But basically, like...
I've let it go.
What time was it? When did it come out?
2000 and...
I think it was the fire. I think everything was happening with like the fires.
19
and,
maybe, and 18.
And then we entered into COVID. Yeah. It was very much like people were so overwhelmed with everything that was going on. I think the last thing they really wanted to do was like, oh, I've got to go on a diet and I've got to care about
where
I get my, you know what I mean? It wasn't, I think that it came out at the wrong time.
Yeah, thanks.
But it's a great book.
Thanks,
babe. It is, it's a great book.
So where we are now, it's interesting, like it's such a departure for Teal.
Although food has always been such a big thing in my life, whether it's like dealing with an eating disorder, you know, because from lack of information around nutrition.
Yep.
Or, you know, and struggling with my weight from lack of information around nutrition, like when I was younger, to loving food.
Yeah.
It's
lovely when this reconciling of all your loves, essentially.
Yeah.
The peace.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess for me, it's like it's the amalgam of all the things that I've been working on for the last nearly 20 years. Yeah. So this sort of marriage of nutrition, provenance, food, it's all kind of come together in the Good Farm Shop. But what I will say is it's more of a departure from Till, because as we've just said, like, she's come from an industry that's acting, directing, writing, and she's very gifted in that space. But what is incredible is that she's clearly a talented but incredibly creative. And so you go, okay, well, we now run this essentially a ethical ready meals business. Like, how, where's the creative part in that other than making the food and coming up with the recipe ideation and stuff? But she's taking all this creativity and she's just like repackaged it into ideation and problem solving. Like, she's incredibly proficient at problem solving and coming up with ideas.
Yeah.
Like, she's a fountain of, you know, she's Mount Vesuvius of ideas.
And annoyance at times.
You know, as soon as my eyes crack in the morning, she's like, she's there on the edge of the bed, like, I've got some ideas for you.
I wish we did have film rolling for that moment.
But thanks, that's really nice, honey, thanks. But just to add in, so it was, you know, beef, chicken, it wasn't online butchery, right? We then started, you know, when you buy whole animals from farms, it's really hard to get rid of that whole animal. But firstly, it's really expensive to buy a whole animal. What I think most people don't know is that most butchers do not buy whole animals. They buy crates of cuts that have come from an abattoir, right? So a lot of the animal gets wasted, or it gets turned into dog meat or dog food, or it gets, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
What happens to
there? There are these examples we've talked about and we know about, a Feather and Bone in Sydney.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But you were saying because they're in Sydney, at least gives them a shot. Even theirs, it's not straightforward and easy, but it gives them a shot at making it work.
Yeah.
So this is hard.
And they've been around for a long time. They've got a great reputation.
Yes.
I think for us being such a small business, it is expensive to buy a whole animal, but it's just, I guess the better way to put it is that it just ties up a lot of capital.
Mm.
So, and then you have to have it butchered, which is, again, tying up a lot of capital. Then you have to freight it all. And so, you know, when we don't have a huge, you know, big deep pockets to kind of buffer all that, it takes a lot of money out of the business and stops us moving forward in other areas.
But the other thing about it is that most people will buy, they want the eye fillet. Eye fillets are gone in a second. Yeah. You know, there's like six eye fillets to a cow. And then you've got a bunch of scotch fillets, you've got a bunch of, you know, porterhouse and T-bones and stuff. But you've got so much truck on it and so much mince. And those aren't the ones. So you're left with so much of the cow.
Wow.
And then you're sold out on those cuts that everyone wants. So then you've got to go, oh God, what are we going to do with all this stuff? Which was the great fortune that we started the business like that, and what we are now is a ready meals company. But we had to get there through, okay, what are we going to do with all this extra meat? Okay, we're going to make, Scott, you're going to cook meals with this meat.
Yeah, one of the,
you've got to start making ragu with the mince. You've got to start making your slow cook Masamam curry with the chuck. You've got to, every other dish that you've made, get cracking. And so we did, and we bottled them. We put them in 1 liter jars, which was kind of a new thing because we didn't want to do a whole lot of plastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And we started doing the markets, and we started selling the ready meals at the markets. And we had really good feedback. People loved them. We were selling them for way too cheap, and we made no money. We've now got someone helping us with the money stuff.
Very good.
Neither of us are very good in that department.
But Scott's good at cooking, I'm good at ideas, but we're
really struggle
with the financial part.
But the idea that we should be expert at everything is part of the problem, isn't it? Yeah. And you, by the way, how ironic, when I hear you talk about the humans gravitating to the prime cuts, it's like the old model, the industrial model of farming, where the cows, of course, go to the favoured grasses
and wipe
them out.
Yeah.
So how ironic that with the good stuff,
yeah,
we would do the same thing as the model we're trying to get away from.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
Mm.
But you have to turn the other stuff into the good stuff.
Yes, well, there you go.
Which is what a lot of, you know, that, not a lot because there aren't a lot, but places that do buy, butcheries that do buy whole animals, they do turn them, they are inventive, and they do turn them into meals. And
as know, cultures did.
Yeah, they wouldn't waste anything.
And they would, but they wouldn't suffer it. They'd find ways to prepare it as well, hey?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So basically then we worked out, we went away for Christmas kind of going, what are we going to do? Because we hadn't made a cent at this point. We'd been going for a year and a half. Revenue was going up, but we weren't making any money from it. You know, and it started, you know, it started as a passion, which it still was. And I guess at the beginning it was like, it doesn't matter. We don't need to make money out of this.
Yes.
You get to a point in a business when you've been doing it for a year and a half and you go, I think we do need to make money. I think if we're going to keep doing this, our savings is going to go. We're going to need to make money from it.
Yeah. I relate to this too. And you've got, and then you've got kids. You're like, well, school's going to come. Yeah. Okay. A bit of forward planning after all.
Yeah.
And you're saying, they're saying, play with me. And you're going, no, no, I've got to do the business stuff. And you're going, but business stuff doesn't even make me money.
Yes. What are we doing here?
So we basically came back and we were like, we have to pivot the business.
Mm.
We have to, the ready meals we can sell, ready meals we can get into shops. We couldn't get our meat into shops because you could only put a 5% margin on them and we were making no money anyway. So we were never going to be able to do that.
So it's the value add you could bring.
The value add that you can bring.
And we went away for Christmas, but we went to the UK. So it wasn't like a tropical exotic holiday, unfortunately, but they are so far ahead of us in terms of green labeling, food provenance, but it was pretty impressive in the supermarkets that we really cool stuff. Like now there's like high street regen burger chains very ahead of us for sure.
And you walk into main supermarket, I guess, kind of similar to like a Harris Farm. Not main supermarket, but a supermarket similar to Harris Farm, but it is a main supermarket.
Yeah.
And there's like, there's stuff about the farmers. There's information about where they get their meat from and why they care about that and how long they've had these relationships for. And you really get the sense in this that this chain of supermarkets is about that.
Yeah. And there you go.
Yeah, anyway, so these supermarkets and it was inspiring. And there were ready meals there that were beautiful ready meals. And they were in these like this great bamboo kind of, they weren't packaged in plastic, really? This endless line of plastic ready meals. It wasn't
totally
sure they were, but there were also these other ones that were just beautiful bamboo packaging and really cool. And we tried some and they were delicious. They weren't like, you know, organic produce, but it was high quality.
Yes.
And I got really excited.
Yeah.
And I was like, I had thought for a while, like, that I wanted to ditch the buying whole animals thing and like turn the business to ready meals. But I felt like Scott wasn't there yet. And I think I might have like mentioned it or something, but then we got back and I was kind of working out how I was maybe going to make it kind of sound like it was his idea.
You need to do that.
Anyway, he was like, one day he was like, when we got back, he was like, I reckon we should not do the meat anymore.
So you arrived
ditch the butchery.
You both arrived at it.
Yeah. And I was like, great idea. Yeah. And we just came back with this whole new excitement, you know, and you know, let's be, we were always going, it was never going to be, okay, if we can't do buy whole animals, let's just buy crates of cuts and who gives a fuck where it comes from. It was never going to be that. It was either quit, stop it, and let someone else, like Feather and Bone, just continue doing their thing, or it was going to be, how can we make this work in another way, keeping the philosophy and the values that we started with, which is what it is now. So not an online butchery, but beautiful ready meals that use, you know, 99% organic ingredients.
The meat is from region sources.
You know the sources.
And we know that the company that we work with, they have the ability and the license and the permission to kill on site.
Okay.
On farm.
Yeah.
Which is pretty unique.
Oh, that is unique.
And so it takes the whole abattoir out of it.
Yes, so important. It's such a big part.
So it diminishes the amount of stress that animal encounters. So
it's big.
You know, the business is sort of had various iterations, which I guess is proves to us that we're married to the values and the principles of it and the pillars of it, not necessarily like what the business is.
Yeah.
You know, we've gone from a cow share to an online butcher to now we're a ready meal. And I just wanted, now's a good time to bring, you know, I think we should ditch the ready meals. And Monday morning start something fresh. Yeah,
it does go to show what I think is a message for all of us to be nimble.
Yeah.
To be open to being nimble with this, with whatever we're doing.
Which is the creative side, right?
So bang.
It's, yeah.
So to tap those people. We don't all have to be that either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So speaking of which, you said film passion. Mm. And I know you played a part with this, right, with behind camera and stuff too, in the evolution of how this documentary came to be. Mm. Are you too feeling like that old space you inhabited with this new space are coming together in some form?
I don't know what that would look like necessarily. Mm. Like, yeah, I haven't, that idea hasn't gone off in my head yet, how to marry the two. But I think the other thing that hinders creativity is when you're giving so much. I mean, we have two small kids. Yeah. I basically have been giving so much of myself to keeping two kids alive.
Yeah.
So I really think that a big part of me turning away from the film industry or losing my passion for that was that I just didn't have enough of that resilience anymore because I was just, it was all going into the kids. Oi.
It's like an alarm, isn't it?
A podcast here.
Car alarm.
It actually, I don't know if that guy's going to shut up because that happens.
What is it?
Be annoying.
What is it?
Should we just get the rifle out and shoot it?
Yeah. I'll stoke the fire. I'll stoke the Barbie.
Can you eat it? It's acceptable.
Yeah. Is it?
Okay. Yeah. He probably predates
bird life,
our existence here.
Predates podcast.
Anyway, I feel like I'm now at a point where I can breathe.
Okay.
And so I probably have more space for things like, you know, film industry
in
stuff.
In general.
Acting stuff. Yes. Making, creating.
Yes.
That'll
be interesting.
Yeah. Anyway,
to see what comes. We'll see. What does come. Yep. And the back? How is it in the worship? Yeah.
My back?
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Really?
Yeah.
So that journey has resolved.
Oh, yeah.
How, yeah, that is so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It took about a year to kind of get to the point where it wasn't an everyday, you know, it wasn't a presence in my life. And then there was about 3 or 4 years where I'd have like an episode where it'd flare up. And now I haven't had one of those
pages
for years and
but
years.
It was chronic pain for like 8 years of your life.
Yeah, seven years of
a chronic,
like,
situation.
Yeah, it was pretty debilitating, not just physically, like it took a toll on,
yes,
you know, it's hard to be present, it's hard to really kind of embrace the world, embrace life. I was pretty cranky, I was depressed a lot of the time, and I lost all my identity because I was like the fit guy that used to run around everywhere and use his body, and now I, at that point, I couldn't use my body, so I had to like remodel who I was. It wasn't a fun time.
I relate to. I mean, I had, having been the trainer as well, I had a big motor accident and spinal fractures and stuff, and that sort of reshaping of identity. But yeah, I think about the power of your story, that nutrition was such the driving factor in the renewal. And I'm wondering then how much emotional work or spiritual work even was part of it. Like, was there that wing, if you like, that you worked on too?
I'd like to say yes, but in all honesty, I guess, I mean, I'm about halfway through that back episode, you know, I was a personal trainer, and the client was saying to me, your back injury, you know, it's all emotional, right? You know,
I heard plenty of that too.
Yeah.
And I was going through a breakup at the time, so.
Me too.
There you go.
So it was a marriage, you know, degradation of a marriage.
There you go.
She's like, it's all wrapped up in that. And I was like, I guess because I have a science, you know, I've done exercise science. I can see the scans on my MRI. It seemed just so empirical to me that, you know, A equals A plus B equals C, you know, like it's, I knew when I did the injury, I knew how it felt. There's the scans. That's the prognosis. And it's hard to then accept, well, it's your circumstance, it's your experience, it's your trauma, it's your grief, all that stuff. And so if I'm honest, I was a bit of a no-no to that. And then because the nutrition sent me a very loud, clear signal that if you give your body the right inputs, it opens up the capacity and the bandwidth to heal and repair. So again, in that, I am the case study. This isn't, admittedly, you know, the caveat here is that this isn't a clinical controlled, blind placebo trial. Like it's, I am N equals once. And so it just reinforced my science logic that, you know, A plus B equals, you know, it's, I'm eating these foods, I'm eliminating that. There's no sort of credence given to spiritual or energies or grief. But I have, you know, when things are stressy for me in the past, I feel it in my back.
Me too, there's mate. That. Me too, exactly. So
I'm like, I can't ignore that either. Yeah. But it's not, I'm not going to sit here and say I went on some deep spiritual mind-opening journey that helped my back, because that would be a lie.
Oh, wonderful, guys.
It would be a better story. It would be
no, I think that, I mean, I can map my experience onto that, and it's just interesting to contemplate.
Mm.
Did get better, though, when I came into your life.
Oh, everything got better, though.
I know.
A lovely way to end. That's beautiful. But if you've listened through to an end of an episode, you'll know we close actually on music. But I want to open the gambit up to film potentially too. If there's been music or film, in this case, that has been significant in your life. I mean, you mentioned a couple before, Till. Maybe it's music that we focus on here for you. But you choose. That's been either significant in your life, representative of a transformative time, or just something you're reveling in right now.
Can you go first?
All right.
This is really interesting questions.
This is going to sound very English, but there's two bands that I listen to probably ad nauseum for Till. One, well, I'm sure everyone's heard of both of them, but it's Radiohead and Rolling Stones. So the Rolling Stones, far out.
What can you say?
Some of those riffs and Charlie's beats.
For 50 years,
for 60 years,
60 now. There you go.
I was playing it on the drive up yesterday. And to the point where Tashi, my eldest, was like, can we listen to something else? It's been like 5 hours now. But I'm like, listen to this, Tash. Yeah, listen to that riff.
Yeah, totally. The same with my boy.
You know, and so there's that. It's a very masculine energy. And it's, there's something. And I was thinking about this on the drive up, because I listen to it. And why do I listen to it? And I know what's coming. I know each verse and melody. But what is it? And there's something that, it just, and it's the same for all people, but the input is different. But for me, it's the Rolling Stones, and there's something that speaks to my, whatever it is, my DNA, and it gets inside me. And Radiohead do something similar. His lyrics are somewhat poetic.
Yeah.
They are poems, really. Yeah. When you look at them transcribed, they're poems, but just layered with amazing sound.
A friend actually sent me his current outfit, which I can't remember the name off the top of the head.
Whose current outfit?
Tom York's.
The smile.
That's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful, mate. Wonderful. Till?
Yeah, I've got one.
Bang.
I bet I know what it's going to be.
What? Go on. Let's hear.
Are you going to go music?
It's a bit of a combo.
Oh, hello. Your mum did this.
Which is why it's so good. Go on, what do you think?
Oh, I thought you were going to, because you've been playing that. This is not Taylor Swift, but it's...
No, it's not Taylor Swift, sorry.
What is it? It's somebody
Billie
really...
Billie Eilish.
Billie Eilish.
Billie Eilish. I watched the Billie Eilish documentary. Love her, I have to say. I hadn't got into her music. I'd sort of only heard that Bad Boy song. I was like, nah, not I don't know what everyone's talking about. But I watched the documentary. She's just a beautiful human. I just really liked her. And I fell in love with her music. Can't stop listening to it.
Is there a particular track that switched it on?
It's actually Not bad.
Really? Yeah, I've not listened at all, I don't think. Oh. Maybe I know something.
It's a really good documentary.
Yeah.
Like, it's
I from do love the, a good music doc.
It's from the when she first releases a song that goes kind of viral, and then it's sort of, I guess it's over a chunk of years to where she basically wins all of the Grammys. Is that the big music awards? Yeah, when she wins, like, all the Grammys. It's her relationship with her brother. So beautiful. They just make music together in their room, and he's just her biggest fan, and... Yeah, just I really like her music.
Wonderful. You guys, it's been really special. We've just lingered into the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
it,
good.
Yeah, I felt like that's what this was going to be in the end, and it was bloody beautiful. Thanks for spending the time with me.
Oh, pleasure. Pleasure. Thoroughly enjoyed myself.
I've just worked out what that bird is as well. Mm. It's like, it was the Oscars song that comes on at the end when it wants you to wrap it up.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
it's nice giving one. Up now. But it was. It's it was fall, like,
it's falling
shut
asleep.
Up, guys.
So falling good. Asleep falling on the branch. Still going.
That's a wrap.
That was Matilda Brown and Scott Gooding at the family farm in the Nambucca Valley on Gambunya country on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. For more on Till and Scott, The Good Farm Shop, the film Rachel's Farm, its tour, and how to book your tickets, see the links in the show notes. I've put a few photos on the episode webpage too. And funnily enough, as we passed through Roeburn in the northwest of WA on the way to Derby, I find Scott's book, The Sustainable Diet, in the local library. It was on the giveaway pile, but hey, someone ordered it. And not wanting to see it turfed, I was assured the giveaways always get claimed. So someone will read this remote copy. If you're interested in the next big regenerative agriculture event in Australia, join me in Margaret River, WA, in September. I'm privileged to be MC and hope to see some of you there. Finally, once again, huge thanks, Blair Beattie from Farmers Footprint Australia, for taking that driver's seat on our journey to the Nambucca Valley for the series of three episodes that concludes with this one. For subscribers, I'll continue to send you behind-the-scenes stuff and other news of what's unfolding as I get around the country. And if you've been thinking about becoming a subscriber, I'd love you to join us. It's with thanks, as always, to this community of generous supporters that this episode was made possible. Just head to the website via the show notes, regeneration.com/support. And thanks again. And as always, if you think of someone who might enjoy this episode, please share it with them. Please also continue to rate and review the podcast on your favourite app. It all helps. The music you're hearing is Regeneration by Amelia Barden off the soundtrack to the film Regenerating Australia. My name's Anthony James. Thanks for listening.